You've gone very quiet, Henry. Is that because you're not speaking to the mic or because you're speaking into a cup? It looks like you're speaking into a cup.
How do I sound? How do I sound?
Oh, it's better when you're not speaking into a cup, even if the cup does have pictures of penguins
in it. I like speaking into a cup because I want this whole... I want our podcast to have that vibe of a film where lots of divorcee, divorced ladies get together at a country house in Maine. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And talk about their problems and just bond.
They've got huge cups.
Have huge cups that they talk into the whole time.
Really beautifully made ceramic cups.
Beautiful earthenware cups,
yeah.
Which you can buy at the end of the film. It's the first film to be tied in with a ceramics company.
Starring Helen Hunt.
Helen Hunt.
Helen Hunt's correct. Involved.
Emma Thompson.
Emma Thompson.
Streep, for sure.
Exactly. And a younger one, maybe Emma Stone, you might get a...
Yes.
A younger one in there as well.
There needs to be one younger one, yeah. Diane Keaton, I think, is absolutely pivotal to this, isn't she?
Diane Keaton's going to be in there. And also, there's who's the one who's a singer as well, who did...
Streisand.
Cher.
Well, Streisand and Cher, I think, are in it.
Yeah. As a little comedy duo with an ice cream van that pops up halfway through.
Yeah, exactly.
Plemons? Jesse Plemons?
I think Plemons does turn up. I think Plemons is hewing redwoods down in the garden a lot of the time.
Huge 600-foot, 4,000-year-old redwoods.
He's just doing it for fun.
He's just doing it for the bloody hell of it.
Just knocking them down.
Yeah, just knocking them down.
One after t'other.
Bette Midler.
Yes, Bette
Midler
would
be
in it. She'd be a safe hands in that movie, wouldn't she?
Yeah, this is going to be box office.
Yeah.
It's going to be huge. There are some restaurants and places you go to now, or cafes that do brunch and stuff, and at the end, you can buy the bowls and the mugs and the ceramics.
Yeah.
Have you ever seen a film where at the end, you can buy the ceramics, you can buy the rough-hewn...
Redwood pieces.
You can buy Jesse Plemons' hands.
You can buy Jesse Plemons' hands, or at least the hands that he used in the film.
Yeah.
So maybe in the film, Plemons is not just taking down redwoods, he's also a sexy potter.
He's a sexy potter.
Yeah, that works very nicely, doesn't it? He needs to be doing
both. That ties in beautiful.
He's completely self-sufficient. The overlooked sexy bachelor next door.
Sexy himself, bachelor.
He can't just be a divorcee. I think he needs to be a widower, possibly.
He's a widower.
But several times over.
Oh, yeah, he's a serial widower.
Several times over. And all his wives have died in plaid factory accidents. Where the plaid... Because he plaids... He plaids... Is that the word? He plaids all his own shirts.
Yeah.
Obviously, plaid. Everything about him is plaid. But he plaids them himself. And any wife of his has to be able to work the plaid mechanism where all the different... fibers, to create a plaid.
Yeah,
it's not easy. There's lots of different fibers, and you can easily get garroted. You can easily get garroted within the fibers. So which of those?
What is the film called? Is the film called something like the Plaid Factory Coffee Break or something like that? Is that?
It's called the Plaid Factory Coffee Break. Yes, of course it is.
So the women work in the plaid factory.
They don't have to, because often the titles can be a bit peculiar with these art house films. They don't have to necessarily relate to the main characters.
They all have different jobs because they haven't got together for years, these girls.
Yeah.
One of them's got a big high-flying job over in the city, the Central Zone.
Oh, yeah, yeah. The big city in Maine, which, of course, is
Maine city.
Know is
Maine. Maineville.
Maineville. Maine.
She works in the top floor of a multi-story building. Yeah. One of them... is a writer.
Possibly had a bit of withering feedback for her last novel. And is
I think she did. That's why she needed to retreat and get all the girls together in the cottage. She writes romantic books that are a bit Mills and Booney. She'd like to write a proper, she'd like to write a serious novel one day. Will she have the guts to do that? Mm-hmm. And will having a really, really hot fuck with Plemons help her find the muse? That's the question. That's a question I'm just going to put out there.
One of them makes surfboards for blind dogs.
That's Cher.
Yeah.
Yeah. But she has to blind, she insists on blinding the dogs herself.
She's got in a bit of trouble herself, hasn't she, about that?
She has for that. because there wasn't enough, there weren't enough blind dogs, it turned out, for it to be a viable business. So she had to, if you can't get the market, you make the market.
One of them's a fugitive.
That's right. That's right. And in fact, Ben, I misheard you, but I think that's given me a great idea. One of them, Bette Midler, is a fugitive. She's committed grand larceny, grand theft, time machine, theft auto in the future.
Yeah, because this needs a sci-fi hook to bring in that bit of the audience that would otherwise be reluctant to turn up to this major cinematic event.
Exactly. You've got to, if you want your husband or your teenage son to come along to this, you've got to get a sci-fi.
You've got to put a transformer in it, haven't you?
Yeah, that's right.
And Streisand is entirely CGI, is that right?
She's CGI, right. And she is able to turn into a sidecar.
Yeah, that's right. In fact, but she can't control it, so she would pretend to sidecar even when it's not needed. So that's her, because each one has to have a little journey.
And a little floor as well, isn't it?
A little floor.
Achilles heel, yeah.
Yeah. And again, all the ceramics are available in the cinema lobby.
Yeah. Who's doing the soundtrack for this?
Oh, good question. I think it's probably Enya.
You know what? I think it's probably definitely Enya.
Enya in her first collaboration with Def Leppard.
Yeah. Orinoco Steel.
It's the feel good and feel sexy hit of the sci-fi summer. Yeah. I think there should be a multiverse element. So it sometimes cuts to scenes where.
So a very, very similar thing is happening in Vermont, is it?
Very similar things happening in Vermont. But in that version, all the women inside all have Plemons' face.
Mm-hmm. And Plemons is the redwood who's being.
And Plemons is the redwood.
By Emma Stone.
By Emma Stone. But no, by a sort of mutant Emma Stone mm-hmm. who's got all of the. Who's got Helen Hunt's heads and all of the various different women. Mm-hmm. But again, the ceramics are available. If you see a ceramic on the screen. In fact,
oh, you can guarantee.
Maybe if you're wearing Google glasses, we can make it so that you can actually select it.
3D, 3D selection. It'll be ready for your departure. It'll be waiting in the boot of your car.
Waiting in the boot of your car. You enter your billing details. Enter your. There could be pauses in the film where that.
Well, there could be bits of the dialogue as well. When Plemons is doing the pottery, and Helen Hunt goes, "Oh, that's such a lovely pot you're making there," and then he would go, "Yes." And only for $12.99.
Yeah,
yeah. So just keep. You just want to seed the prices.
You
in
want to seed it in every now and then.
It can be personalised for $15.99 if you want it as a gift.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
Free delivery if you order before the final act of the movie. The final act of the movie is when the FFBI, the future FBI, come through a portal to pursue Bette Midler, the fugitive, and there's a huge bazooka fight.
Nice.
That starts the final act of the movie, doesn't it?
Across which Streisand is looking into the middle distance because she's finally found peace.
She's finally realised that she is enough.
but also, with that newfound knowledge, she can still enjoy herself and she can still enjoy her body. She sucks on the cigarette. She puts it into the ashtray on the bedside table.
Also available for purchase.
You can find it. She looks to her left. We expect it to be Plemons. It's not Paddington's.
It's not Paddington's.
Plemington's bear.
It's Paddington. He's up for it. She's up for it. And
he's not sure whether or not he's got a barbed penis, but he's promised to look it up.
Oh, God.
I mean, I think we've got ourselves a hit here, people.
Well, it's all about the merch, isn't it, these days?
It's all about the merch, as we know fine well.
ThreeBeanSaladShop.com. Let's turn on the bean machine. First of all, a big thank you to everyone who's been to enterthebeammachine.boats and added your topics to the Beam Machine. And it's time to crank that Beam Machine.
Oh, lovely.
This week's topic has sent in by Becky from Bremen.
Thank you, Becky.
Hi, Becky. Thank you.
Well, she describes it as the Bremen Borough of Barnet.
Nice.
Okay.
Is cruises.
Ooh.
I've never been on one. Have either of you ever been on one?
No, I've never been on one. I find that when you see them in the wild, they're quite terrifying just because of their size. They're huge.
Yeah. So you see these cruise ships, they've got multiple swimming pools and stuff, haven't they?
Yeah.
But the sense you get from what I've seen is a sense of absolute just the toxicity of the water in the pool, just a sense of toxic, infected.
Well, someone has tried to build paradise, right? And their vision of paradise, as it turns out, is just an awful lot of flumes.
And I agree with them.
Essentially, when I look at pictures from those cruise ships, I just get this kind of smell of urine coming off it. There's just the amount of people, the amount of piss, the amount of chlorine, just constantly having to chlorinate flumes to deal with the amount of piss being produced by all these humans. You know what I mean? There's a sense of this infection and colds going around. And
Legionnaires' disease.
Legionnaires' disease flying around and syphilis and trench foot and a lot of sort of quite old problems. You know what I mean? But...
Because the early COVID outbreaks were on cruise ships, weren't they? There was that one that was off the coast of Japan that they wouldn't let dock.
Yeah,
right, there you go.
Because some people had COVID and then everyone on the ship got COVID.
Yeah, exactly. It's an infection hotbed, isn't it? Absolutely. And just the amount of plumbing that's having to happen and the sense that the swimming pool and the flumes are just an extension of the plumbing, that everything's just...
So your contention, Henry, is that the reason that these ships have loads of water slides and flumes is that it's the only way to... sluice out all the piss.
It's about piss sluicing.
You just got to keep the piss moving. Is that what it is? If it stagnates, that's when you're in trouble.
I think there was probably a sort of algorithm, a sort of mathematical equation, whereby you couldn't expand a cruise ship beyond a certain size because the amount of human infection would make it unworkable. But you know, we know how venture capitalism works, and we know the insatiable appetite of the shareholders, and they would have found a way. I think the solution was okay, the problem we've got is we're seeing people and infection as separate things. See the people as a form of infection. Only by curing the infection can we expel the pus, in inverted commas, money from the host organism. We sluice the clients. So essentially, you combine the two. So the swimming pools are the plumbing. Do you know what I mean? We keep the people moving through tubes of water. We can solve the problem. We didn't see plumbing and people as separate anymore. We see the whole thing, the whole ship, as a sort of over to you, Mike.
as a flush,
exactly. The whole ship is in a permanent state of flushing.
Mm.
But great show in the evening, though. Great show.
Oh yeah,
but still a great show in the evening.
And are people still snobby about them? Like the modern cruise, are people snobby about the modern cruise with all the bells and whistles and the flumes and the? Because when I think of the snobbiness of cruises, that to me is more like the sort of home counties retiree who at most wants to do a bit of curling on deck, mostly a bit of bridge, and look at a fjord from the distance, and that's it. But those aren't the same guys that are getting involved in the wave machines and the flume parties, are they?
No, but what it is I guess the snobbiness, it comes from people who are like, No. When I go on holiday, it's all about the authentic experience. I'm not just arriving on a ship at these places.
I see.
I'm going for a month, and I'm meeting the local people and getting involved in the local pottery scene. I'm getting my hands dirty. I'm learning about the clays, the deep, solid clays of the soil of this place.
Who's that fascinating old man over there whittling a spoon out of quartz?
I'm going to do a rubbing of the side of his face.
I'm going to do a rubbing of the side of his face. That sort of thing.
Stay still, man!
And every year we return and they greet us like returning cousins. And they slaughter a goat and we eat it in their rustic parlour. And it's a wonderful experience.
Yes, I'm shagging the mayor, and so is my wife. We're all shagging the mayor. That's how you get to know these people.
And I think that those people really are kind of kidding themselves that they're having a slightly more authentic experience.
Right.
When actually the reality is...
Whereas on the other hand, there's people going, I'm jumping into a huge vat full of piss.
From which I can see the outline of Bergen.
In my peripheral vision. But it's hard to see straight with this much piss in your eyes. Come to tonight's chlorination ball, starting at 7:30 p.m. It's true. Yeah, which is the real Italy, Ben? There's something honest about the cruise, isn't it?
Yeah, you're just being a tourist. It's what you're doing.
Yeah. I have been on a holiday once in Madeira.
Very nice.
Which is a place where cruise ships come.
Yeah.
So there are sometimes you'll go to a place and suddenly you'll look up and
the sky has turned black.
Yeah.
The air is filled with the stench of stale piss.
Exactly. Suddenly it's like, oh, wow, I didn't know they were filming. I didn't know they were making a new cocoon. And B, I didn't know they were filming it in this hotel.
I don't get this reference.
Because suddenly everyone's really old.
People.
Okay. It's suddenly swarming with delightful silver-haired folk.
Mm-hmm.
But because they've swarmed in off a yep. cruise. So the cruises come and have sort of stop-offs.
Yep.
Suddenly the town will be swarmed with...
Completely swarmed. No one's spending any money because they've already paid for full board on the boat. So they'll wait. Thanks.
Yeah.
Don't let a single thing pass your mouth, Marjorie. We've paid for our food.
We paid for a prawn breakfast and we're going to eat a prawn breakfast.
If you're bored, pull that fresco off the side of that building and shut up.
I guess it's part of that thing is that people feel like those people, they turn up and they're kind of on rails, right? They just go to the places they're meant to go to and they see the things you're meant to take off. Mm-hmm. And they're not going to the wonderful bistros. If you go to the back street, it's wonderful. You go into the back streets and they greet you like a brother.
And do you know, it was full of locals when we went. It was full of locals.
And you eat where the locals eat. Yeah. And it's wonderful. It's absolutely wonderful. Mm. You're eating olives off a very dirty plate. Mm-hmm. Very dirty.
Filthy. And sometimes the restaurateur is you know, laughs at us. It's wonderful, isn't it? We're having such a great time, all of us together. And he gave us this wonderful... local dish, which I mean, it looked like he'd got his eldest son to cough onto a plate, and they were all laughing. It was obviously a tradition, wasn't it?
And I asked for I know a bit of Balearic Spanish, and I did my best, and I tried to order a chicken dish, and in the end, he just gave me a plate of tripe and a Snickers.
But I knew it must be a tradition because the smile on his wife's face. We were having such a good time together.
And you know it's local because there was a bite in the Snickers. So you know, well, if it's a local that's taken a bite out of that. So if it's good enough for a local, it's good enough for me.
Exactly. And all the actually, we've got special treatment because the other locals were eating something which looked much more like normal chicken. So we're actually getting special treatment, which just shows how much they do respect us and how they're such wonderful, wonderful simple folk, aren't they? Yeah.
So I do think there's something sort of a bit honest about just getting off the cruise ship.
In your bum bag.
Yeah.
Getting on a bus.
Yeah.
Being taken directly to the kind of showstopper thing you're meant to take a photograph of.
The mausoleum, whatever it is. Here you go. Get out of the bus, take a picture, get back on again.
Get back on the boat, eat a really, really extra hot lambuna.
Get straight back in the pool.
Yeah. Chuck your guts out over your toilet in your little chemical toilet in your little cabin. And then press the flume button. The whole thing turns into a flume. You're shot through and you're in the pool 20 seconds later, aren't you?
Landing with your legs around the captain's head. Perfect.
Exactly. And then he waddles you over to the lamb korma bar, because they've got a lamb korma bar now in most of the pools.
Floating one,
Floating lamb korma. And it's...
And you can have a lamb korma cocktail, can't you?
You can have a lamb korma cocktail.
Yeah. Get your juices flowing.
And if you shit yourself, don't worry, because the whole thing can then reflume, and then you're shot through, and you end up...
They just rebrand it as a shit flume, don't they, just for 24 hours?
It's the happy hour Well, it's a mega toilet, isn't it? It's just become the happy hour.
Yeah, they might have to double sluice for a couple of hours. That's all right. People understand it.
Double sluice it. Yeah. And the last resort, the captain can press a button, the whole boat just turns over and everyone gets a nice salt water wash. The whole boat flips. You get a nice salt, which is, you know, how nature disinfects things, isn't it?
It's very bonding.
And also, the other thing, which is why it's written on the front of the brochure, is piss is a disinfectant. You can't be dirty with piss. It's impossible. Yeah?
There's also a thing with cruises where it's somehow... I've never been on one, but it's an honour for some reason to dine at the captain's table. Mm.
Yes, that is a thing, isn't it?
What is going on there? Because the captain is just a man who's trained to pilot a ship, right?
I assume that the assumption is that the captain has got, that they've got some really red hot anecdotes
about the time when the flumes got so in, so encrusted, they had to.
The only way to get him out was to declare war with Tunisia and hope that the Tunisian cruise missiles had sorted out.
Which, as a seafaring captain, you can do. You can declare a war on Tunisia. It's not something you ever expect to have
completely,
to do.
Yeah. But, legally speaking, you can do the works.
Well, I think about being the captain, right? You talk about the captain's table, Ben. And, Mike, you reference anecdotes. I think like, the way maritime careers work, it's quite a dark and mysterious world, certainly to me. I didn't think it has a standard career progression, like, say, marketing.
Or stand-up comedy.
So I think to get to be, I didn't think there's a classic way as a graduate or whatever that you go, I want to captain a cruise ship. I think you have to essentially.
You have to have been bopped over the head in the Philippines somewhere.
You've been
a 13-year-old boy or girl.
You've been bopped on the head, or you've been orphaned. Something has happened where you've decided to seek a life at sea.
Yeah, you've been caught up in a Napoleonic event.
Exactly. You've taken a lover who is the wife of a rich aristocrat.
Right, yes.
You've had to essentially lie low and find a kind of, 'cause it is kind of like a parallel other world, the seafaring world.
Mm. Well, lawless as well, famously.
Completely lawless. It's the law of the deep, isn't it, essentially?
Neptune's law.
It's Neptune's law. Let me put it this way. Neptune is not handing out slap wrists and warnings and, you know what I mean?
Neptune is small state.
Neptune is very, very, very small.
Very libertarian.
Yeah. Very libertarian, yeah. I don't know how you'd end up being, like, captain of a cruise ship. Like, would you have started off in like, military naval stuff, or would you have... I'd be interested to know if any of our listeners are high up in the maritime world.
Mm. We've got a submariner.
That's true.
Oh, yeah.
Not quite the same thing. They don't do cruises on a submarine. For good reason.
Not yet.
Yeah.
But we must have some. The thing about being the captain, obviously, the one thing that everyone knows about being a captain, well, there's two. One.
Free fish fingers.
Free fish fingers.
And you can marry anyone to a fish finger.
You can marry anyone to a fish finger, as long as the fish cake is the master of ceremonies.
Mm-hmm. What I was getting at, though, is that you have to go down with the ship, which is, I think, a downside.
That's a huge downside. Yeah. But that is why I think, that's why they have beards, Ben. Which just ties into last week's topic of disguises. That's why all the captains have a beard. It's very famous. And as we discussed last week, the beard is the easiest. It puts you in a strong disguise potential situation, because all you have to do is shave the beard off. You're no longer the ship's captain. No one knows who the hell you are. And you inflate the dummy captain.
Got to remember to take your hat off as well.
Hat off, or flip the hat. It becomes your new outfit, which is Madame Jambolina.
Okay.
An Austrian heiress.
So brightly coloured sort of tartan or something like that on the underside.
With a brightly coloured tartan beret, an eccentric Austrian heiress.
Who's very much first on the boat, first on the lifeboat, right?
First on the lifeboat, exactly.
Heiresses, they always get first dibs.
You pull out you pull out your special fish fingers, which you keep under the normal ones.
You're recently betrothed.
And you stick them on your fingers because this heiress
has crusty orange fingers.
She's rumoured to be coated in breadcrumbs from the neck down, isn't she? But no one really knows.
She has a crusty orange skin complaint and oddly oblong fingers. But that's how disguise works, Ben. The detail.
That's breeding, though. That's breeding. That's
it's
real
breeding. Because she's so well-bred.
Her great-grandfather was a cod.
That's what they say. So then you shave off the beard, you put on the cod fingers, you flip the beret, and then you inflate the dummy captain.
You elbow your way past any of the children who are panicking on the side, trying to get onto the lifeboat.
Madame Jambolina coming through.
Instruct the bosun to launch it. Don't hang around.
Well, I think we can fit another 36 people onto this. Launch the lifeboat. Madame Jambolina has spoken. Launch it. The future of Prussia depends on the continuation of my bloodline. And then you're off. You're off on your way. That's how you do it.
There must be more children with these fingers. These fingers can't die with me.
A true unifying European peace treaty can only be taken seriously if it is signed with big, chunky, oblong, breadcrumby-looking orange fingers.
Don't you understand?
It's one of the first rules of diplomacy.
I'm engaged to the heir of the tartar sauce family. Don't you understand?
And that's right, yes, the design on my hat is indeed a tartan. Yes. That is why it is a tartan that I wear.
Yeah, that's crucial. That's got to be, yeah, it's the only approach, isn't it?
But it's true, going down with the ship, that's the one bit about that job where you're like, oh, really? I mean, also, I feel sorry for captains where they've got to go down with the ship, but basically it wasn't their fault. I mean, come on, give me a break. It was Dave's fault.
Yeah.
Or Dave the cabin boy.
It was Dave the cabin boy. or whoever, you know, if it was someone else's fault, he'd be a bit like, oh, really?
Maybe this is old fashioned, but it's like that kind of thing where responsibility lies with that person, even though they had nothing to do with it. The buck stops with that person. Kind of like a government minister, you know, it's like they weren't really involved, but they sort of have to take the
But they have to take the resignation. Yeah. But you know what I would, in that situation, I imagine there must be captains who, when the ship is sort of, if you have to be the last off the ship, it therefore follows that you want everyone to get off the ship as fast as possible. The earlier that you get off the ship, the better, yeah?
Yeah.
So essentially, what I'm saying is if I was the captain of a ship, if things got even at all choppier, I'd be hounding people off the ship.
You'd be calling abandoned ship three or four times a day.
Just get off the fucking ship. Go.
It's a bit windy.
Get off. Just It's okay, I can throw your child for you. Give him here.
I think you might have seen a Coke can floating in the sea 300 yards away.
Get off the ship. And then there'd be a very unusual, unique maritime legal case where everyone had got off the ship except the captain. Because it actually might be that by the time ship's righted, it's just me on the ship. But technically, I haven't broken the law of being last off. So that'd be interesting.
Quite difficult to operate on your own, though, potentially.
Mm, true.
Especially if you want to make the most of the flumes.
Yeah. Do you think the captain ever sits there and goes, flumes everywhere, but none that I can really use without losing my sense of authority in front of the passengers? Damn. Do you know what I mean?
I think as soon as the passengers disembark, he's straight on the flume.
Flume time!
Yeah. The whole crew.
Yeah. In fact, imagine being a captain, because at the captain's table, I think you're in a strong position, aren't you, to flirt with people as the captain? Because you'd be like, you know, when this cruise is over, I could give you a solo tour of the flumes.
When they're at their filthiest.
Just because there's a little gap between the end of the cruise and the disinfectant squad coming in. There's a window.
You can barely see that the blue one is blue. It's just covered in skid marks all the way. It's absolutely the most disgusting thing you've ever seen. Bits of toenail caught in the joints.
They say it's the nearest thing to being inside a giant human piss-sodden turd. That's too much. We're going too far there. See, over there on the side of that flume, I've written something. I've scratched something into the urine encrustment.
And what is it that you've scratched in?
Well, it's quite hard to read. It's because of all the fumes coming off it, isn't it? And my eyes are so bloody bloodshot. I can't tell if it's the chlorine or the piss. This has been a really gross episode, hasn't it? But that's okay. It's Christmas. Would you like to hear the names of the top 10 largest cruise ships in the world?
Go on then. Yes, please.
Number 10, P&O Avia.
Avia.
The British Elegance.
Elegant.
Mm-hmm. 9, Costa Toscana, an Italian tribute.
Oh, a tribute ship?
It is. It's a tribute ship. Don't know how that works. But I've Googled on it and there's people in Zorbs. So it truly has captured the essence of Italy. There's people in Zorbs on a massive deck.
That's quite high risk on a boat, isn't it? You could Zorb off the edge.
Feels high risk.
Feels it, doesn't it?
By the way, the first one I mentioned, P&O Avia, I'm just having a quick look. It's got a crazy golf course.
Excellent.
Number 8, the MSC World Europa. MSC's world-class wonder. Looking at it, it looks quite classy, that one. Number 7, Allure of the Seas. Oasis-class elegance.
That means nothing.
It's literally a meaningless set of words. Oasis class.
Does that mean that Liam or Noel will be there at any one time? You can always dine with one or the other.
Yeah, or possibly, I mean, although if you look at the small print, it could be Bonehead. Yeah. It's generally Bonehead. And when you go and ask him about it, he'll be really pissed off. He goes, yeah, I'm just here because there's some illegal thing to do with the name of this cruise ship. Pays a living, and I've fallen out with the Gallagher brothers. Absolute twats. Do you know what I mean? He'll say something like that. I've even forgotten the name of the bassist. Genuinely. Don't know what it's called.
Paul.
Was it Paul?
I don't know. It's a good bet that it's Paul.
It's a good bet that it's Paul. Oh God, number six is actually Oasis of the Seas, a pioneering megaship. So I think on that one, you're more likely to get the actual brothers. That one's got someone snorkeling in a swimming pool on a cruise ship. Is that a weird thing to do? What are you going to see? Look, you can actually see piss formations. Look at the way that there's a school of piss over there. Look at the way it's almost intelligent. There's ice skating. I'm seeing ice skating. There's a woman on a, what are those kind of high wire things that you attach yourself with your hands and it's fun?
A zip wire.
A zip wire.
Zip wire. It's weird, isn't it, stuff you have to do on holiday? We've got Harmony of the Seas, number five, A Symphony of Luxury.
A Symphony of Luxury.
Of Luxury. There's a lot of similar words going around. An oasis of luxurious symphonatas. They're all just disguised words for it stinks of piss, aren't they?
Welcome to Uranos.
Named after the ancient Greek god of piss.
Float through our acrid acid flames. Watch the thick thug of acrid gas rise from the quarterdeck.
Sleep on a 6-foot urinal.
And believe me, by the end of the trip, you'll know why it's called the poop deck, and you'll wonder why it's not called the poop and some quite a lot of piss deck. Number four, Symphony of the Seas. There's so much symphony.
There's not much imagination going on, is there? With the
no. Symphony of the Seas, Royal Caribbean's crown jewel. It's a lot of regal language, isn't there? A lot of symphonies, yeah. A lot of musical, classical, regal. Oh, blimey, it's got a production of Hairs.
It's got a production of Hairspray.
happening in it, genuinely.
At all times.
24-hour Hairspray.
At all times, you can enjoy at any point in the show as well, it's going. So they need at least 300 or 400 of them to be going at the same, so you can, you know, start at the beginning, start in the middle, start at the end.
You won't miss 1 second of Hairspray. In the Royal Symphoniata boat, the crown jewel in the scepter of our regal symphonic
concerto package.
Oh, there's Black Friday cruise deals.
Go on, book us on. Book us on.
Here's another thing which goes with cruise and seafaring language is the she will be sailing.
Of course.
3- and 4-night sailings from Port Canaveral when she launches. With each sailing calling it Perfect Day Cocoque and Nassau. The wonder of the seas, the flagship of Royal Caribbean International and the largest cruise ship globally. God, that must be a hell zone. The exact same size as Milton Keynes, but with twice as many Rymans. It's sort of like living in Milton Keynes, but on the sea, isn't it? It's like just living in a small town.
With a decent leisure centre.
Yeah. The only cruise ship with its own dual carriageway.
But it's almost like living in a compulsory leisure centre, I feel like, isn't it? Because then the leisure's even more leisurely. Utopia of the Seas. The ultimate weekend away. Utopia. They're aiming high there, aren't they? Bloody hell.
Hello, we did enjoy our time on the cruise, but we don't believe that it reached the heights of utopia that you promised.
So we will be asking for a full refund. It's got a food court, people.
Of course it does, yeah.
It's got a food court. It's got a park.
It's got a park.
And it's got a noodle restaurant in the park called Izumi in the Park. Blimey.
The ducks in that duck pond must be so confused.
Poor, poor things. It's got a boy riding a what looks like a small, something in between a car and a bed, down a bright purple sort of tube.
And an area of woodland in which we've reintroduced wolves. The first rewilded cruise ship in the world.
Watch a wolf taking down an elk.
as you tuck into your lambuna.
Indicate to the wolves which elk you would like to eat. And they'll take it down for you.
By giving it the mark of death. Please pick up your mark of death paintbrushes at reception. Number two is Wonder of the Seas, the ultimate luxury. We took Utopia and we made it better. This one has one of those giant chess sets on the deck.
Oh, that's a bit of a step down, isn't it?
It's got a swimming pool, which I can only describe as looking like a clown's nightmare.
Well, which is a world in which all the circuses are shutting down because of health and safety legislation.
Yeah. It's a man having to, it's a very, very small man with a very, very high hat having to release a bear back into the wild because of ethical worries. No, it's a kind of clownish, it's kind of clown pool. It's a swimming pool full of giant, brightly coloured objects. It looks like hell. It's got a yellow, twisty slide. It's full of like lights and colours and just an absolutely hellish-looking swimming pool. It kind of looks like a slot machine. It looks like a kind of fruit machine, something halfway between a fruit machine and a swimming pool. I think they've gamified pooling. And then number one, Icon of the Seas, the world's largest ship breaking barriers.
Oh, my God, I'm just looking at a picture of the back of the Icon of the Seas. Yeah. Have you got an image of it?
Yeah, it's extraordinary.
Look at the back. It's migraine-inducing.
It looks like a bunch of board games have been scattered. You know what I mean? It looks like
put together
Boxing
quite
Day.
Haphazardly as well. It looks like the whole thing, like if someone sneezes loudly, it's going to collapse.
Yeah, yeah. There's a stage show happening on this Icon of the Seas one, which it's sort of unbelievable. There's a kind of huge sort of tube. It's very tube heavy, isn't it, Cruise World? Sort of huge. It looks like they've built the London Eye.
It's got nine whirlpools.
It's got nine.
It also has the tallest waterfall at sea. There we go.
There can't be much competition for that.
That's what I'm looking at. What looks like they've done is they've basically taken the Millennium Dome. Somehow they've stolen the Millennium Dome, put it on the boat. They've dyed it purple. And they've filled it with a kind of tube of water that's cascading from a kind of suspended, like, glowing ring in the middle of the ceiling. It's kind of, I think that's maybe this largest waterfall thing. It's kind of looks like a portal to a different universe. It's extraordinary. Should we go and check out the portal this evening? Yeah.
Has anyone ever done a zombie movie on a cruise?
Well, that's quite we will now.
Starring Streep.
Keaton.
Helen Hunt. Bette Midler.
Emma Stone.
And playing Madame Jumbelina, Jesse Plemons.
People are saying it's almost too much of a cynical bid for an Oscar, that role. You're always going to get considered for a Jumbelina type role, aren't you?
Well, I think that's Cruises.
That's Cruises.
Time to read your emails.
When you send an email, you must give thanks to the postmasters that came before.
Good morning, postmaster. Anything for me?
Just some old shit.
When you send an email, this represents progress. Like a robot shoeing a horse.
Give me your horse.
My beautiful horse.
Okay, time for your emails. Thanks to everyone who sent an email to threebeansaladpod@gmail.com.
Thank you.
First of all, an email from Matt with the email subject header. I have been Q-jumped by Sophie Ellis-Bextor.
Ooh, strong claim.
It is time to flip the script.
Let's flip it. Flip it, baby.
Now, before we go, I've not read this yet. Obviously, he's claiming that he's been Q-jumped by Sophie Ellis-Bextor. Just to explain, Henry himself did Q-jump Sophie Ellis-Bextor in the past.
That's correct. But in my defense, it was only for a couple of plums.
Indeed. Is it possible that Sophie Ellis-Bextor started doing this having had this happen to her?
Hurt people, hurt people.
Exactly. Anyway, let's see what he has to say. I have been Q-jumped by none other than Sophie Ellis-Bextor, and it was on a professional scale.
That means they were buying food in bulk in one of those mega supermarkets you get for people that run restaurants and small hotels.
Big old cash and carry, that kind of thing.
The old cash and carry.
And she was merely buying 2 kilograms of plums. He writes, my family and I were at the front of the queue for a swingy, spinny-around ride at Chessington World of Adventures. Mm-hmm. When, to our shock, we were asked to wait as the barrier closed in front of us. We watched as a small security team escorted a family past the queue and straight onto the rides. That being the family of Sophie Ellis-Bextor.
This is huge. Ooh, that's an outrageous claim.
This is absolutely huge. That is outrageous. And I think legally we cannot condone Sophie Ellis-Bextor's behaviour there, can we? She is a monster. No, we can't. I mean, joking. We can't confirm or deny that story, can we? Because that is heavily libelous.
We need to get Bellingcat on the case, I think, don't we, to see if that can be verified.
Or possibly a whistleblower from within Sophie Ellis-Bextor's own family.
Or from Chessington World of Adventures. He writes, we had to watch as they rode around on their own. For me, and I think my parents would agree, that was when my childhood ended.
Well, I'm not prepared to spend the rest of my life living in the Bolivian embassy, so I'm not going to comment. I think this is a very, very, very hot, very, very sensitive area.
I want to know when this happened. So Matt, I assumed that Matt was talking about, he was escorting children, but he was the child in this scenario.
Yeah, so it could have been at the height of her fame.
Could have been. In which case, what a choice that is. Do you know what I mean? If the golden rope twixt the stanchions can be lifted for anything in the nation at that time, she's chosen the curly-whirly swoopy ride at Chessington. It's interesting.
But also, did it happen after the grocery store incident with me? Was she overheard to say something like, well, it was good enough for the plum bastard?
The only thing giving me slight pause is the idea that maybe she was with somebody who had kind of access needs or something, which is why they got to, you know, skip the queue. So there's a possibility that she was...
It's tricky. And that might be the way that her legal team spins it in the end.
Well, that's true.
Yeah.
Anyway, this will run and run, I think. But it's good to see that things are starting to bounce off. Maybe that Henry isn't the world's worst bastard.
can I make something? I think as I hope it will one day become known, the couple of plums law, if I might refer Mer Honourable Gentleman to the couple of plums law, that kind of thing will be heard.
That, you imagine that is going to get past the House of Lords in this nation. Are you mad?
They do have bigger fish to fry, probably, but I think, but to me, in my utopia, there would be a situation whereby if it is just for a couple of plums or equivalent, for example, you're queuing up at a clothes shop, the person in front of you has got like 50 pairs of trousers they're buying.
You've just got a couple of plums.
You've just got a couple of plums. you should be allowed through, potentially.
No, that's your utopia, maybe. That's my living hell. Okay.
But let's reframe that, Henry. Say that law is passed. It's Rishi Sunak puts it through. In the Chessington World of Adventures context, if Sophie Ellis-Bextor had been holding a couple of plums, would that put her to the front of the queue to get on the spinny ride?
No, I think the way the legality of it works, technically, she'd have to go through and it would have to be just the plums that went on the ride. So she'd be able to watch the plums going over the way. If it's just...
So it's not like it's not an access all areas lanyard holding a pair of plums.
So if it's just for a couple of plums, then it has to be for the plums.
I see.
The plums would have to be able to...
Because you were buying your plums for a couple of plums, weren't you?
Well, exactly. Well, that's certainly how I'd have to argue it in court. So in that situation, though, by all means, get those plums GoPro'd up. Get a couple of GoPros on them. And then your family, you know, her and her family could still enjoy the ride in a virtual sense from the sidelines.
Okay.
I mean,
okay.
Some people will argue that the 10 items or less queue is actually something that already exists in supermarkets to cover off this problem.
Well, yeah, which leads to me thinking that we maybe don't need to go down this statute route.
Because that road's already been gone down. Yeah.
Hoovering up the precious time of the legislature.
What I think is that the 10 items or less section of a supermarket, that could be expanded, I'm arguing, beyond just supermarkets into other areas of life.
We've had an email from Rob with the email subject title, I'm radioactive.
Okay.
Dear Beans, I'm currently writing to you from the ward where I'm being consensually imprisoned for the next 3 weeks as part of a medical trial. The trial began when I ingested a small vial of liquid that tasted of rancid aardvark piss.
Which, by the way, in a cruise context is the captain's port.
From that point on, I've been wazzing into a jug the size of a jerry can and shitting into a series of buckets the size of an extra large mug. The jugs of urine are stored in a communal fridge, along with my fellow volunteers. The highlight of my day is a game of roulette I get to play when rummaging through the piss fridge to find my jug. Suffice to say, the liquid I consumed on the first day contained a radioactive isotope. As such, I'd love to be awarded the recognition of being your most radioactive listener.
Well, congratulations. I think we have a winner. Don't we, for that, in that category?
Yeah, I mean, if anyone else is more radioactive than that, yeah, do get in touch.
Mm-hmm.
Don't take steps to make yourself more radioactive.
No, please don't do that.
Please don't.
Yeah, Rob is clearly is furthering mankind's progress. Isn't
yeah. Thanks for doing that, by the way.
Bridge full of radioactive piss.
Yeah.
He says, "I'll be out in time for Christmas, and so I'm treating the whole thing as a kind of festive present to myself. The way I see it, at bare minimum, once I'm on the other side, I should have newly found abilities to cling to most surfaces, easily flip over the average family car, or at least mildly glow in the dark. Yours, Radioactive Rob."
Oh, thanks, Rob. I mean, that's incredible. Yeah, and thanks for doing all that good work for science.
It's time for Listener Bollocking of the Week.
Uh-oh.
Oh, no. Accessing Listener Bollocking. Bollocking loading. Bollocking loaded.
We had a lot of these in various formats, but I'm going to read this from Lee. It is with an Atlas stone-sized heart I must bollock Mike about Jeff Capes. So the bollocking is here. They come into two categories. They're from both me and Mike. So
yeah,
let's start off with Mike's bollocking.
Go on.
So Mike described him as a wrestler. He was not a wrestler, but the world's strongest man in 1983 and 1985. He was also an international athlete, winning numerous medals in the shot put, and a policeman.
The policeman? Is that a now defunct Olympic sport?
He was a policeman.
Oh, I see. He was a policeman.
He didn't win a medal and a policeman.
I thought you meant that was like you tossed a policeman over a wall or something.
It sounds like he won a medal at the shot put and the policeman. And a policeman.
That's the way I heard it as well.
Yeah. He was a policeman.
Yeah, so not a wrestler
at all. I bet he knew his way around a wrestling ring.
Yeah.
A few people wondered that we'd maybe got mixed up in our heads with giant haystacks. I think that might be.
I do put, yeah, they're very much on the same shelf, those two. Yeah.
He was a bit of a maverick policeman, I heard. In fact, he was the only policeman to actually tear the book in half before throwing it out of the window.
Isn't it throw the book at you rather than out the window?
And how do you throw it out the window and then tear it in half?
They tore it in half first because he used to tear big books in half, didn't he?
Are you supposed to tear it in half, throw it out the window, and then go all the way down the stairs and then tear
it
off?
I'm just trying to have a bit of fun. And some people aren't up for fun sometimes. And good luck to you, that's all I say. Yeah, good luck to you.
So, Mike, do you accept that part of the bollocking?
I will, absolutely. Out of respect to Jeff Capes in particular, I will accept the bollocking.
Bollocking accepted.
So you, Mike, you put all chunky, muscly men in the category of wrestler.
Yeah.
That is despicable. Because, you know what I mean? That is, isn't it? Wrestler.
But what because just because of all the wrestling you do, but I don't put you on the same shelf.
Exactly, yeah. Why am I not in there? Does Schwarzenegger wrestle? Was he a wrestler?
Yeah, as far as I'm concerned, absolutely. Yeah.
Yes, there he was, Mike. Yeah.
So yes, we should show more respect to Mr. Jeff Capes. And also, then my part of the bollocking is covered by this sentence. Also, he's not dead.
Okay. You buried the lead there, haven't you? That's almost...
How do you take that? Are you going to swallow that, Ben? Or? Are you going to argue
can
the
Jeff
toss?
Capes prove he's alive? Can anyone prove Jeff Capes is alive? Let me Google him.
Other than Jeff Capes himself.
I think, to be honest, Capes. I have to accept that one. I think...
Okay.
Bollocking accepted.
Yeah, so he's only got a born... bit of his in Wikipedia. He's only got born in 1949.
Okay. Well, that looks like it was a very well judged double bollock by Lee then, doesn't it? Thank you, Lee.
Yeah, well done, Lee. It's rare you get in a 1-2 bollock like that we both accept. That's pretty That's pretty good.
Yeah. Keeping us in check, and we appreciate it.
Double bollocking, double accepted. By the way, you won't know what this means. I'm looking at his stats on Wikipedia, obviously because I'm someone who is having a hiatus, but still overall, I would say I'm involved in a beefcake journey. I understand some of this stuff. Personal records, bench press, 300 kg, in brackets, 661 lb, close brackets, raw.
Which means
for that. You don't know what that means, but that's incredible. And also, squat, 380 kg, brackets, 836 lb, raw again. I mean, imagine that cooked already, but raw. And then deadlift, 454.5 kg, 1,000 lb, from height of 18 inches. I mean, even in my pomp 2 sessions ago, I wasn't bench flipping anything close to those stats. Even in my pomp. You know, like session 3, I wasn't even, to be honest, I don't think I was even bent, I hadn't even bench, done that bent, that many bench presses at that point.
Certainly not from 18 inches.
Certainly not from 18 inches.
Or raw.
Yeah.
So yes, thanks everyone for their emails. And do email in on any topic, but I think this week we want people...
Oh, if you've had a life at sea.
Yes, life at sea.
Seafarers. How does the career progression go?
The mariners, please.
Mariners. We want mariner chat.
Of all types.
Let's hear from you. Thanks to everyone who signed up on our Patreon.
Thank you.
Patreon.com/threebeansalad is the place to go. If you want to hear more of us talking about this week's topic or other stuff, we put out a monthly bonus episode. Also, you can get ad-free episodes. And if you join at the Sean Bean tier, you get a shout out from Mike.
Oh, you bet you do.
From the Sean Bean Lounge, where Mike was last night.
I was indeed.
It was a good night last night, wasn't it? In the Sean Bean Lounge, wasn't it? Because it was the annual Dry Feet Show and Tell Symposium.
The annual Dry Feet Show and Tell Symposium?
Yeah, wasn't it?
You bet it was.
It certainly was, yeah.
Yeah, thanks, Henry. And here's my report.
It was the annual Dry Feet Show and Tell Symposium last night at the Sean Bean Lounge. The opening speech was made by success story of last year's symposium, Hannah Holland, who went from dry feet to wet feet in just 3 weeks using her sister-in-law Tara's patented and Sean Bean-approved soggy espadrilles. At the other end of the spectrum was Andrew Stevenson, whose podal dryness had worsened to the point where he has been banned from Greenbelt areas in case he triggers wildfires. In the Sean Bean Lounge operating theatre, Hannah Robb attempted to swap dry scales for fish scales on the feet of David Rostron, but failed to install gills, leading them to spoil almost immediately, and the only thing they were good for after that was the chum bucket in the Sean Bean Lounge shark tank. Also in the chum bucket that evening was Gregory Steele for an unrelated dress code infraction. Sean Bean loungers are reminded that backless trousers are strictly forbidden in all food preparation areas. Maria Bach proved definitively that dry enough feet could be used to accelerate the production of cured sausages. A perfect Genoese salami was plucked from between the toes of Adam L, and a traditional bean reel style barn dance was performed upon it in celebration by the dry but nimble feet of James Evans. And in the duty-free sales area, Sanagarten's luxury fruit-flavoured footskin rescue pastes were widely seen as an unmitigated disaster. Grace Hilton's humidor cowboy boots were popular but ineffective, and Emma Copeland managed to sell Carl socks made of fog. Thanks all.
Okay, that's the show. We will finish off with a version of our theme tune sent in by a listener. This was sent in, I think, from New Zealand, yes.
Nice.
From Min. They write, Kia ora beans.
Kia ora.
Kia ora.
To show my appreciation of the whimsical show that I enjoy, but I'm never really sure how to explain to people.
It's quite simple. It's Eamon Holmes, Gabby Roslin and me. No holds barred, high octane, adrenalized. Yeah.
Truth bombs left, right and centre.
If you made a barbecue out of the amount of sacred cows we slay in one ep, you'd feed a bunch of... people for ages is what we say, isn't it? Because we don't care.
Anyway, they write, to show their appreciation, I have concocted a little theremin outro.
Oh, nice.
Hope you enjoy it.
Thank you very much.
Brilliant. Thank you. And thank you, everyone, for listening.
Yes. Until next time, goodbye.
Cheerio.
Goodbye.
Mm-hmm.